This is a podcast from Minute Media.
I'm the man who has the ball. I'm the man who can throw it faster than... So that is why I am better than everyone in the world.
You've reached the end of the set number three.
All right, welcome to another episode of Tigers Radio Pod, whatever you want to call it. As we continue to... We're not going to change the music until next year because... Halfway through, the old one had Tigers SRD, so to represent a new change. I'm Rahel Casillo, alongside Ms. Chris Brown and Youper. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. And we are proud partners of the Minute Media Podcast Network. So coming up today, we're going to be talking about the Tigers' changes in the front office. We're going to be talking a little bit about the minor leagues as well, as Spencer Torkelson did another outstanding thing this week with multi-home run game, so we'll get to that as well. And congratulations to the Taylor Little League World Champions as they had their parade today as they came home, not too far from my house, actually, about 5-10 minutes away, and great for this area over here in metropolitan Detroit. So Downriver, which gets a bad rep on radio shows for some strange reason, people, you know, Taylor Tucky, blah, 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 whatever. can't say that anymore because they're the best team United States. So props to them. And they played some fundamentally sound baseball. Some baseball I've seen better than some minor league balls, minor league games, if I should say. So, but that was a tough win over Ohio. And there you go. And then Ohio, tip of the cap to them, how they paid respect to the team after the game with a little bit of the just kind of saluting them and everything. And so good sportsmanship. And that's what I like to see. So, but gentlemen, how are you guys doing tonight?
Not bad over here.
We're all set here at the Iowa Broadcast Studio, the Western Outpost for MCB.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the furthest west of us out here. So, but yeah, by the way, if you have not, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Tigers Radio. And again, anything just goes a long way. We're supposed to head out to Grand Rapids tomorrow and go see the Whitecaps play. So we're going to do that. And among other things, we have planned for the offseason. So it's already September. It's already crazy. And it's already cider season, which I have not been to a cider in a long time. So, but let's get down to it a little bit. There's a lot of things that have happened this week that pertain to not only baseball, or excuse me, not only to the team itself, the players on the field, but some front office changes. And some of them caught us off guard. And I'll start with you, Chris, because this week, some of the changes involved that – the Tigers on Tuesday announced that Sam Mezen, Jay Satori, Mezen and Satori were promoted to vice president, assistant general manager, and Kenny Graham takes over as the player personnel. But assistant general manager David Chad is shifting his focus to player development. He's going to be around the minor league affiliates and what have you. And then David Littlefield is taking a special job of scouting. So, Mezen has served as director of baseball operations, professional scouting for the last four seasons. And for Jay, he's been spending the last six seasons as the team's senior director of baseball analytics and operations. So, in other words, the old regime seems to be starting to get swept out a little bit. As I tried to do a really weird sweep motion, and I don't know what the hell that was, but
yeah, it's kind of fascinating because when we looked at it, we've talked about this like. You know, for years it seemed like, you know, Vila was supposedly bringing in, modern analytics and bringing things up to speed, but it always seemed like the top brass was still old school scouting guys, Littlefield, Chad, Avila. And then just kind of fascinating for this to happen right now. They didn't make a big deal out of it. You know, they just announced it, but it does sort of give you the feeling of things roiling underneath the surface there. Like something's going on for this to happen just right now. Yeah. And you know, the Jeff Moss, the bomb thrower, who is never scared of putting out rumors, or utter BS, basically said that, that AJ Hinch can't stand Al Avila. And this is part of that. Apparently, I guess the idea being that AJ Hinch is somehow now has a direct line to Chris Illich and is basically running the show from behind Avila. Oh, I don't think it's...
Well, that's embarrassing.
I don't get the feeling that it's quite that sinister. I think Avila kind of knows which way the wind is blowing. And it's something we've discussed before about Alavila as a survivor. Alavila, you know, Dave Dombrowski was his mentor and friend, and Alavila knew that Dombrowski was being fired and didn't say anything for however many days and took over for him. And that doesn't necessarily make him a bad person. I think a lot of people would do the same thing with faced with the chance of getting basically their dream job. You know, you're like, we'll probably be friends again someday. I'll take this job. But now we've seen that happen. And we've seen Littlefield and Chad, who he's been with. Chad's been there since 2005, 2006.
Yep.
15 years of basically being his right-hand man. And he's just like, see you later. So we don't have direct knowledge of this, and I don't have direct, a history of contract law or how baseball front offices work, but it feels like the sort of thing where like guys don't really get fired in a front office. Like GM can get fired. We've seen it happen, but usually what happens is, and I don't know if it's because like they've got things in their contract that you have to fire them for cause, or they might, you know, there's buyouts or whatever, but they just kind of get reassigned and they're off to baseball Siberia. Now we're like, yeah, you go around and you watch some baseball, and we'll let the smart guys handle everything. So I'm kind of rambling here, but it was kind of a seismic shift on a random late August day.
It really was. It caught everybody by surprise. There wasn't even any kind of rumbling about it in the days prior. I think that it's as far as they could go at this time of year. With the team somewhat on the upswing this year, at least in the eyes of many, it's been hard to broom everybody out. Plus, I think they probably like these young guys. So they promoted them to a spot of power. And influence, and I think it does have Hinch's handwriting on it in some respects, because he's probably not the old school guy that Littlefield and those folks are. So it just kind of makes sense to get the whole organization kind of on the same plane, moving in the same direction. So there's less push and pull between factions like that. So also, it's very rare that they would bring in a new general manager and saddle him with a seated manager. They usually get their own guy at some point. So that would be kind of awkward for Hinch. So Avila stays. He brings up the young guys, and, hopefully they're moving forward. And we'll see just how analytical they get.
Yeah, I mean, Hinch was quoted in the press saying, I'm very, very happy with the promotions. They've done the work long before they're getting the recognition. For both Sam and Jay, they've been on the forefront. They're now just being titled correctly, end quote. Mm-hmm. So, if that's something right there. Plus, Hinch has been kind of all of a sudden out of nowhere, just like, you don't want to face us, kind of doing the rah-rah speech. And every Tiger fan is just like, they're just pumped and just getting crazy. And it's just like some of the stuff here is what he's been able to do with this roster. It's just...
You crazy son of a bitch, you did.
He rallied Tiger fans. And I think it's just kind of like putting the writing on the wall that, Jeff Moss, usually he says stuff with depending, and I know a lot of people don't like Jeff Moss. So that being said, there's some degree of accuracy for it, but it's also kind of right there. If you look at the pieces of how everything's been laid out in the press, Avila's been kind of quieter than normal. He does say things. He did say, are we going to spend some offseason? Yeah, a little bit, of course, but it's going to be player development. But at the same time, you look at AJ Hinch, it's a firm, it's his team. It's him. You're either with us or you're against us. And, he's the Warriors going through Harlem on a subway. Just all those teams, Tigers, come on, play. It's just that's how it is right now because they've just been able to capitalize on this. And so I think AJ Hinch right now is in the driver's seat right now with the way things are going, right? Even with the loss today, that was a tweet that I thought that crystallized it perfectly. I think it was Mark that said this, Mark Gourash. Tigers under Ron Garner lost the game 14-3. But they came back. It makes it entertaining because, if I was at the office today, for example, and I'm looking and I get the alerts and I'm listening to the game on the radio and I had radio turn off for a little bit. I look at the alerts and I'm like, wow, it's 8-6.
Mm-hmm.
there's never out of a game. So,
well, and the bullpen's better too. I mean, they kept the dregs of the bullpen in the Gardenhire days would also have made that 14-3. You know,
yeah, and with the same guys though, but it's the Federer difference too. What were you gonna say, Chris?
Yeah, no, I mean there were a couple aspects of all this. I think you're right, Roger, when you're saying that Hinch is basically, he's a really smart guy, I think. And I don't think that's a shocker to anybody, but not just smart, but savvy and knows how to use the media to his advantage. And I think he's been essentially using the bully pulpit of having the I don't know if it's a requirement to comment after every single game, whereas Al Avila will come out and say something, I don't know, once a month. Hinch has been able to move the narrative and push things forward and get things going his way by being able to talk every single day. And he's using that. He's not just going out there and going through the motions. And we, you know, he's been on various TV shows and stuff like that. I don't know how much of that is, you know, in his contract or up to him, but he's, yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of reshaping this entire organization from the managerial spot, which is almost like a super old school thing. Like, you know, it used to be the manager had all the power, mm-hmm. and then it kind of in the last decade or so, it's become kind of, you know, more of the front office, the smart analytics guys. But it's almost backwards for the Tigers, where like, yeah, they were just so far behind. Now they had to get the forward thinking manager and reverse engineer it. But there are two things that I kind of like to throw on my head here. One of them, I like the idea. I doubt this happened, but I like the idea of before the season, them splitting up and saying, okay, here's the old school scout guys. You guys pick some free agents. We'll sign them. And then we'll let the analytics guys pick some free agents and we'll sign them and we'll see who does better. And the reason I like that is when I think of Nomar Mazara and Jose Urania and Wilson Ramos, I think of those as guys who like scouts wanted, mm-hmm. you know, look, oh, Mazara, he could hit the hell out of the ball. And they're not looking at the data to see he hits it on the ground all the time. Or Urania, he throws really hard, doesn't miss any bats. Meanwhile, Robbie Grossman is a guy like, oh, he's only hitting 220, but he provides all this other value. It's like this stark difference in the guys they signed this offseason. So I kind of like that idea, even though I don't think it happened. And the last thing I'll say is, the one thing that kind of concerns me about this is the draft was like 6 weeks ago. How much did Littlefield and Chad have to say about the draft? Like how, like, well, I mean, we think that, but at the same time, we've talked before, Jackson Jobe, is Jackson Jobe an analytics pick? A kid from the heartland a high school pitcher from the heartland.
Like David Cadd goes all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like and we know when they're at the top pick, that's going to be, you know, the whole team working on that. But it doesn't feel like, to me, it doesn't feel like the sort of pick that the analytics guys would have been championing. You know, yeah. What I mean? Like, oh, yeah, I mean, like, Bo Burrows and Matt Manning have already exceeded what you expect from most high school pitchers. And that's disturbing in some degree because Bo Burrows is just getting constantly pummeled in AAA and in the majors, and Matt Manning is having trouble. But that's like a positive outcome for all high school pitchers in the first round. So, yeah, and I just think of like, you know, the lack of success with second rounders in the recent years. And even we talked about before, like I don't want to denigrate Isaac Pacheco, it's very early in his pro career, but I have a lot of concerns about him and about that profile. You know, as like, I think he's going to get enormous. He's already what, 6'4", 225 or something like that. He's barely 18 years old. He is, he's striking out at a 40% clip in rookie ball right now. I just think that in like 3-4 years, he's going to look and perform like Ray Rivera. And, that's my fear. Hopefully they can work things out there, but it's just, yeah, it's not a profile that I terribly, I like. So I don't know. I just worry that these guys had like one last draft in them before they got shoot off, and it's going to be a real bummer. So
if things go well, it'll be their last top five pick for a while too. So
yeah,
at least we hope.
I mean, I look at somebody like, for example, Austin Murr, who we saw last week in Lansing, and he's kind of like, he went up against one of the best prospects in the A's system. The high A's pitching was not that good, except for what was the gentleman's name? I totally drawn a blank on his name right now. He just got promoted to Double A.
They have Colin Palouse, who
Colin Palouse. Yeah. That's who he was facing, and there was like
Colin Palouse.
Colin Palouse was like a 9-11 pitch at bat, and he battled them all the way through before I think he flat out to right or something like that. But then Burrow's put up some good at bats. This is a 6th round draft pick out of the North Carolina State, which or NC State, which the Tigers have been drafting out of that area quite a bit. We saw with Packer and Deffridge and what have you. So, but this was that was a good start to, for me. That's seeing that kind of progress out of a 6th round draft pick. I mean, of course, he's an advanced hitter, kind of like a little older, but still to get from rookie ball to Lakeland to West Michigan in a month. And we've seen that with Colt Keefe, who's starting to pick it up a little bit now for the Whitecaps. That's progress. And that right there, that Colt Keefe pick is probably the beginning of what the younger guys were representing, because the Tigers were always kind of, except for, I mean, even with Derek Hill, Derek Hill was an exception to the rule. We'll look at the Derek Hill, because there's going to be a Derek Hill segment today, because the guy's been on fire. But the way they've been drafting before, the Tigers have struck out and missed in the draft since the 80s in high school, from high school kids. And so to see Colt Keefe, again, this sounds weird for me to say this, but it's kind of a phenomenon in a sense, because the Tigers have not, it's been since the 70s, since the 70s. If I'm being serious about high school kids, not college kids, high school kids that have been playing at a high level up in the high minors right now. I mean, Riley Green right now is going to possibly be one of the greatest high school. Well, yeah, Nick Castellanos. Okay, well, yeah, no, you're right about Nick Castellanos. Fair enough, but he's doing that elsewhere, though.
I had the comments. I wasn't able to see the comments, so I'm like, huh, what? Oh,
no, I saw the comment where it says, well, what about Nick?
Yeah.
And he's right to a certain extent, be that as it may. Outside Nick Castellanos, I should say, pardon me for being ignorant on that. But even then, Castellanos is not around anymore, and it's just you look at the swings and misses, though. It's bad. I mean, until Castellanos, there's a lot of swings and misses. But anyway.
Travis Brimond was 1987. I don't know why. I thought it was a little
was more. Was he in college, though, or is he? I thought he was a college kid.
No, amateur draft from Gonzales Tate High School.
Oh. I don't think he was in college.
No, it's on Baseball Reference right now.
Oh. All right. Well, I'm wrong again. I thought Brimond, actually, that. That's still technically right, because it's been almost 40
years. Yeah, they really haven't even tried that much in the last 10 or 12 years. They got, you know, Daniel Fields in the 5th round. There was, they would do it with, like, it seemed like they would only do it in, like, the 12th to 20th round. There were some random, like, Brett Harrison, these random dudes who wouldn't make it out of, or, like, Austin Schott, which I think is 3rd or 4th rounder that,
that's a good one.
Yeah, they just, I don't know. But like you bring up Murr, this feels probably disingenuous to say this, but there are, like, you look at the draft and you feel like, okay, that was an analytics pick. Okay, that was a scouting pick. Like I feel like Jordan, who is it, Sparks? I forgot his name. The kid from South Carolina upstate or whatever feels like an analytics pick. Austin Murr feels like an analytics pick.
Yeah.
But then you got guys like, like Cole Hepp feels kind of like, and he's got interesting stuff, but he feels like a scouting pick. He's like, oh, it's a guy who throws really hard with a sinker. It's like, all right, let's do it. But again, like, this is just me being, I'm sure that there's a lot more that goes into it. It just, it felt from the outside, and these moves make it seem like there was kind of two teams in one there in the front office, and they're trying to finally, unify a little bit.
I mean, even like you talk about the draft real quick too. All the pitchers have one thing in common. Some of the later draft picks, you're talking like Aaron Haas out of Wichita State, and even I think it was RJ Pettit. They have high spin rates on some of their off-speed stuff. So a lot of them, there's a sort of theme that you picked up on in the later part of the draft that seems to be more analytical in that sense.
Yeah, and I think, who was it, Jack Anderson? I think he made his debut today.
Oh, did he? Nice.
I believe so.
And Mike Rodenberg out of Duke, the catcher out of Duke, is off to a really good start with Lakeland. He had a home run the other day. Is Tiger minor league tracker Keen and of course Sherry are down there, and they're getting some good, much needed coverage, because I've not seen a lot of Lakeland in quite a long time. And so outside of the occasional Carlos Guzman appearance that Chipman would post up on Twitter or what have you, Lakeland looks have been kind of slim. But at any rate, let's move on and let's go right into kind of before we get to the segments, I want to talk about a little bit about the news, the Mets being the Mets, and just
I figured that would be somebody's ugly.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to go into it. We're not going to go into it too much, but it's just what I saw today was kind of, to me, one of the most annoyingest things of all time. And I really, this is something that just annoys the crap out of me. And that's nepotism. Nepotism is a thing that runs rampant all the time. You see it in any industry, what have you. And Sandy Ellison's son is going to be reporting right to him. As we'll get to the rest of that stuff later. So now we're going to, by the way, just for everybody who's watching the show for the first time or new on YouTube. So right now we're going to go inside the numbers. Then we'll go to our good, bad, and ugly. So if you have a good, bad, and ugly. And we did get a question from Walter on the who's going on the 40-man for the Rule 5 and the people that we absolutely need to hold on to. So just want to explain that before we go any further.
It's time for Rogelio and Chris to go inside the numbers.
Fire! All right. Youper, you're up on inside numbers. What is your inside number this week?
Okay. This week I was reading up on some stuff about the CBA and a few things, and I found these numbers, 10, 12, and 14. Okay? Here's what they are. Since the new century, since the year 2000, NBA, 10 champions, different champions, 10 teams. NFL has 12 different teams who've won the championship. MLB, 14 teams who've won a World Series since the century started. We hear so often about competitive balance, and we want to do this because a couple weeks ago, I remember we were talking about salary floor when MLB offered that up as kind of a starting point. The $100,000 ceiling and the or $100 million ceiling or a floor and $180 million ceiling. And really, I think we just need to stop talking about it as a competitive balance. It's all about the owners spending less money. That's all they want. I think we've been so conditioned by the media and everything else. I was reading something great by Joe Sheehan today. Just to believe that these salary caps and these floors are to even things up and help players, and it's just not. I think that they're going to help the owners spend less money, and they don't need to because the numbers since in this century show it. The competitive balance is not something that MLB needs to apologize for. Teams can compete, and they actually, and we've talked about in the past, they competed even better when there were fewer restrictions on salary and revenue sharing. So. But I was really, you know, interested to see that the MLB has had the most different champions since the year 2000 among their teams. Also, the most they also have the best percentage of teams that have reached the World Series, even if they didn't win it. So that would include the Tigers, obviously, sadly enough. But so that was kind of my inside number. I'm really getting worried about the CBA. I have a sense. I hope they don't start to duke it out this winter where we have some kind of stoppage next spring. But the more I read, the less confident that I'm getting.
Yeah, I was trying to think. So the only multi-champions in the 21st century, I guess the Yankees were 2000 and 2009, 2007. I don't remember what year.
Yeah.
No, 2007 was the Red Sox. Red Sox have won four, right?
Yeah.
And the Giants won three. Has anybody else won more than one?
I don't think so.
Feels like the Dodgers might, or should, but yeah, no, that's a good point.
Cardinals, I think, had two.
Oh, that's right.
06, 09.
Yep. Okay. So
maybe 10, whatever that was, or 11. 06 and 11.
But in any event, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. Like, there's more parity in baseball than I think people realize, just because a lot of the same teams are good every year, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's a the same winners every year.
Bud Selig jammed that down everybody's throat during his tenure that spending was bad and competitive balance was off kilter. And I just don't agree.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk about them extending the initial contracts of. I'll have to look that up exactly what was going on with it. But guys like, for example, Juan Soto would be with the team longer. So they wouldn't only hit their free agency just once in their 20s. And
yeah,
so it sounds like what they're trying to do is roll back the before the free agent period of the 70s, where they're trying to do almost, I don't want to say indentured servitude because it's not accurate, but it sounds like to me they just want to keep these players longer so they can keep, drive the value down.
Every move is about driving down salaries or spending less on payroll. That's the whole thing. I mean, as they get sucked into these conversations, as the press plays it up this winter, anytime you hear that they want parity, they want more teams to compete, I think it's bunk. They want to spend less money. They want to keep salaries in check. I mean, that's really the only move that they have.
I got a comment from Miguel about it.
The gauge on the feature we pass aside. I mean, come on, it's a bush. Yeah, don't play that game.
Come on, it's a bush.
So, Chris, what's your inside number?
Okay, so mine is -42.6, which is kind of a made up. This one you talked about the Chris Federer effect. I think this one might illustrate it pretty well. So, -42.6, that is the total drop in hard hit rate for three Tigers pitchers this year. So combined, the three of them have dropped 42.6%. All three of them now rank in the top 12 in baseball in terms of the biggest drops from last year to this year in hard hit rate. Joe Jimenez is number two. He's down 17.7% in hard hit rate. Jose Cisneros, number four, down 14.7%.
Wow.
And Spencer Turnbull was 12th before he got hurt, down 10.2%. So there are only 13 qualified pitchers this year who are down at least 10%, and the Tigers have three of them, which is, I think, probably not a coincidence in my head. So I think that's the Federer effect right there.
You know what jumps out at me there? What interests me is, obviously, Joe Jimenez was a train wreck, so that was the low-hanging fruit. He should have been someone they could cut that number off because he was giving up a lot of hard contact. But Cisnero and Turnbull were decent pitchers last year.
Yeah.
So to get them to have that kind of a decrease, that's pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah, I think it, like I said, it was, I was just looking for numbers early. I'm like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's in hard hit rate, I think, as we call it, any ball hit 95 miles an hour or harder, because they end up like, that's the drop-off point where suddenly things start turning very bad for pitchers. So yeah, that's good. It's good progress, and it's nice to see two of those guys in the bullpen. I have buried Joe Jimenez several times over the last couple of years, and he looks legitimately better lately. He still has the occasional hiccup where he gives up a home run or, you know, has trouble finding the strike zone, but his pitches look crisper and he's throwing the changeup more, and he's been impressive. Mm-hmm. And Cisnero just kind of quietly gets the job done almost all the time. He's had a couple rough outings, but every reliever does. So I was impressed with that.
Yeah. I think that when he got out of that bases loaded, nobody out jammed the other day, it was pretty cool. That was really nice.
Yeah, we talked about this with, I did an article on Alex Lange, who was just throwing the changeup and to effective high swing rate. So my set number is 210 and 911, and that is the Yasmeel Grandal's batting average is 210, and his OPS is 911. So figure that out. That is something that is, since he's gotten back off the IL, and this is minimum of 200, like in terms of a 200 plate appearances, it's kind of impressive. And it's almost the thing where this has come off. He had a game last week against the Cubs. I think it was like two home runs, eight RBIs. He's been on a tear. And just adds to the fact that the White Sox, not the Cubs, because we'll get to the Cubs a little later, but good God, the White Sox have no weaknesses in the lineup. I mean, Luis Roberts hitting really well. It's just it's just strengths across the board. And those type of stats, you're looking at that and you're just thinking to yourself, there's not one. I mean, again, Jose Abreu too, same thing. It's how do you get this team out? And so I wonder why they're cruising along in first place. But yeah, so 210 batting average and a 911 OPS.
That I'm looking up now to see that strikes me as, like, if anybody else has done that, I feel like it's probably Adam Dunn.
It sounds like a Rob Deere even.
Yeah. But what strikes me is fun is, what if Adam Dunn were a plus defensive catcher? I think that would be a very valuable player. And that apparently is Yasmani Grandal. So I'm looking now to see, Yeah, there you go. Rob Deere.
See, I knew it.
And well, that was, Yeah, I didn't. I needed to set a a minimum plate appearances for this. Frank Thomas in 2005.
Yeah, toward the end, I believe it.
219. Oh, this is
well. That's embarrassing.
When he couldn't run anymore.
Hit 219 with a 905 OPS. Let me sort this by plate appearances just real quick. Anyway, yeah. So this, well, okay, yeah. This doesn't seem to be very common at all. That's the only other one I could find with more than 100 plate appearances. So,
wow.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good inside the number. Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah, there you go. That's I think all three of our numbers this week were pretty solid. So,
all right. Further ado.
The good.
Oh, that's good.
The bad.
Oh, that's bad.
And the ugly.
All right, it's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. Chris, what is your good, bad, ugly this week?
Yes, without further ado, we'll get into some further ado. Hey, wait a minute. Akil Badu shook off a really rough August where he didn't walk, and I don't know if he hit any home runs. I don't believe he did. And he was hurt, too, but fantastic start to September. He's two straight games with a homer and a walk, which is kind of an Abadu special. It's the fifth time he's done that this year. I was looking. That's tied for the sixth most ever by a Tigers rookie in his first 100 career games. Tied with Steve Kemp and, what's his name? The Thompson guy that we've brought up Jason a little bit Thompson. Lately. Jason Thompson. Yeah, I was going to say Justin, but I knew it wasn't that. And, you know, his home run today came off Frankie Montas, who is a pretty darn good pitcher. And it was his first opposite field home run since April 13th. And this is where I get to point out my own article. I wrote it just last week about Akil Badu, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And it was hard for me to figure out because, just to see the walks disappear like that and the power go away and try to figure out what was going on. And it, eventually I think I figured out the pitchers are just, they had him off balance and they were pitching him away a lot more than they did earlier in the year. And for whatever reason, that resulted in him kind of taking more fastballs away and then popping up fastballs inside when he got them. I guess he was just, looking away and he just all mixed up. And I didn't really have any way to fix it, but I said, if and when he gets out of it, it'll probably come in the form of him hitting for power to the opposite field again. And so I believe that we may have seen him break out of it in the last couple of days. In that home run to the opposite field off Frankie Montas seems like good evidence of that to me. So that's my good. We like Akil Badu around here. My bad, and you guys kind of touched on this, was MLB's proposal for the 29.5-year-old free agency cutoff. And I don't necessarily think the initial offer is terrible. And if people missed this, I didn't seem to get a ton of publicity. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention. But from that offer we heard last month about the you were talking about the salary floor and salary ceiling. Apparently, this was also in there. And the idea is anyone who turns 29 before July 1st of a season becomes a free agent the following year, regardless of their service time. Mm-hmm. And so in place of the current arbitration system where, guys have 3 years of team control and then they start, being able to file for arbitration and then that ugly process where teams have to, go out there and tell their player that they like why they don't want him to be paid as much. They would replace that with like a giant pool of money, which apparently was initially $1 billion. I think this is one of the big sticking points that everybody's been talking about, the service time manipulation, and this is baseball's solution. And it's just a little bit too broad at this point. And part of that is like, we just don't know all the details, but I feel like 29.5 is probably still a little bit high for players in general. And you touched on it, Raj, that for guys who come up at a really young age, that's like 8-9 years of team control. Yeah. So for that, I would really want to know more details about this giant pool of money and how it's distributed. Yeah. And I would want it to grow by a significant amount every year. And most of all, though, and this is the sort of thing that's always been confusing to me is I'd want to know if there's any sort of waiting period or grandfather clause for this, because if they implemented it next season, for example, Spencer Turnbull would be a free agent all of a sudden. Like, well, that was fun. See you later, Spencer. So which feels just kind of like a bummer. Like, you want the players to have the upper hand eventually. I'd kind of like to get through this current crop, though. You don't want to lose Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal a little early now. or, you know, Derek Hill is just getting going and he's what, 26?
Yeah.
So he'd be gone in 3 years. It's just, I think what we would see is probably, in the case of someone like Soto, it would be like in hockey, what is it, like 7 or 27 or something like that, where
yeah,
whatever comes first, you get a certain number of years of service time or you hit an age threshold. So I think that's probably what we're going to eventually see. So again, not necessarily a bad proposal, just not good enough. So this is my good, not good enough, and ugly. and my ugly, and I, you know, these ones always suck to talk about. We've done it before, though, so I guess we could do it again, is Juan Encarnacion, which is another story that I didn't see getting any publicity in Detroit, at least. I don't know if you guys saw it.
No, I have no idea what you're referring to.
Juan Encarnacion, former Tigers outfielder, was arrested in the Dominican Republic for sexually assaulting his daughter.
Ooh.
That's at least what he's been charged with. So he's got an 11-year-old daughter. He's, I think, estranged from his wife. The details were, a little bit. So what happened? Yeah, he was out. I don't know he went to his wife's house or ex-wife's house or, you know, separated wife's house and wanted to come inside because it was raining. And apparently he's been charged with going into his daughter's bedroom and touching her. And this was back in May. And I think he's been in jail ever since.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the definition of ugly. And you never know with like a separation incident or like, you don't know, things get really ugly when people are getting divorced and separated. We know that there was a case in my neighborhood where a woman accused her husband of sexually assaulting their daughter. And it turned out that she was lying. Mm-hmm. It was just to get custody. But still, either way, it's ugly as hell one way or the other. And again, like I wasn't entirely sure why this didn't make any news in Detroit as a former Tigers player, but
never heard about it.
Yeah. Never heard about it either.
Yeah. I'm sorry to ruin your evening with that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Tendency to, wow. Well then, Uper,
break it down.
Walt's right.
Talk about Ron Gardenhire's puppy dying. We'll talk about that.
Uper, bring some sunshine back to the show, please.
Well, my good is something that happened around the trade deadline when Houston and Seattle made that deal for Toro for Graveman. And I was kind of bothered by all the hand-wringing out of Seattle that, oh, we love Graveman, and the GM didn't read the room, and this was the worst trade ever because he was so popular and so on. He's a relief pitcher. Give me a break. That was the biggest joke I ever heard, I thought. Well, this week, Toro for Seattle becomes the first guy ever to hit a grand slam off the guy he was traded for. So that was pretty cool to see. And Abraham Toro, the team is still contending. They've not lost they haven't imploded because they lost Kendall Graveman. Toro for the Mariners, he's got a slash right now of 306, 383, 452 as a Mariner.
So, give him his due!
Absolutely. The guy is hitting, and that looks like it's going to be a pretty good trade. Now, I'm sure Graveman, you know, he's a decent pitcher, but he was a starter, a failed starter who's been now an effective reliever. Those are guys you can find. Whereas Toro might end up being an everyday infielder for the Mariners as we go along here. That's a trade I make all the time. So I was just happy to see him have that moment this week. Kind of coincidental that he knocked it off of Graveman. So my bad. Also at the trade deadline. I'm kind of a trade deadline special here. Brad Hand. Was struggling for the Nationals, not having a great year. So I was mildly surprised that Toronto went after him. I thought there were some guys they could have targeted more if Toronto's going to get back into this playoff race, or a little further into the playoff race. And Hand basically died in Toronto. 11 terrible outings, got DFA. The Mets have taken a shot at him now. Good luck to them. But, you know, Toronto also gave up a pretty good prospect in Riley Adams. Who's hitting well for Washington right now. Might be a starting catcher for them, or at least a good backup catcher. either way, the Nationals are a long way toward winning that trade right now. I would never, if I was making deadline deals and I wanted to improve my team for the playoffs race and the playoffs, a reliever who's already struggling would not be high on my list. So didn't quite understand that one. And it really, really turned out poorly for Toronto. And Toronto's had a good couple of years here of player acquisition. So everybody makes mistakes, I guess. Ugly, Yu Darvish. Right now going through the worst 9-game stretch of his career, with about a 7.5 ERA, over that time. After that wonderful start he got off to, he has, really, really gone downhill, and it's kind of mirrored, the playoff chances of the Padres. I like the Padres. I thought I was really excited about them at the start of this year. Thought they were going to give the Dodgers all they can handle. And now it's turned out to be the Giants are giving the Dodgers all they can handle. And the Padres are about 14 games back, and their starting pitching has tanked, and Yu Darvish has been a big part of it. It's been pretty ugly late summer here for him.
Yeah. You know, the Padres, I think I had their pitching staff as one of my uglies a couple weeks ago. And I was just looking earlier today to see, like, you know, looking for stuff to talk about. And I checked overall team offense over the last month, and they ranked 28th in baseball, yeah. right ahead of the Tigers. and it's 83 WRC plus, the same as the Tigers. So their only reason they're ahead of the Tigers is their defense has been better. But I'm looking to see now, Trent Grisham is their leading hitter. So he's doing okay. Will Myers, but somebody must be dragging him down pretty hard. Let's see who's dragging it down. Here we go. All right, we're on the negative side of things. Victor Caratini, Tommy Pham, Jake Marisnyk. Not really anybody dragging him down super hard. I don't know. I guess just not getting the production from Tatis and Machado and those guys. That Cronenworth has been solid, but he's only hitting .216. That doesn't help. So in any event, yeah, it's San Diego. Like, this is one of those things where you wonder if Preller is going to survive this. You would think so. I mean, he's built this outwardly very talented team and done a great farm system, but they've really collapsed, and he traded a bunch of pieces, not super highly ranked pieces, but Mackenzie Gore has gone backwards this year, and I don't know, it's just been a rough year in San Diego. It looked like it was their year, and suddenly it's like, yeah, they're behind the Reds now, I think.
And, you know, they're a team I was hoping the Tigers would emulate. You know, they've spent a lot of cash. They've been hugely aggressive in the international market and, player acquisition, stuff that, man, we'd love to see, at least me, would have loved to see Alavila do, which we may not be capable of. And that's why these changes have happened in Detroit. But I'm not saying San Diego is done. I mean, they may come back next year and be really strong, but it has been a real disappointment.
One more thing, I didn't share this with you. I shared it with Raj and Jake. What? I'm working on a thing looking at the history of international acquisitions, and I'm kind of over the last 15, 20 years or so, and I'm kind of reverse engineering it. So I went through and found every international signing who has put up at least one 2-WAR season since 2005. And what's interesting is that the Tigers actually had 5. And that's because it still counted Ramon Santiago and Omar Infante. So that I've changed it a little bit to, like, okay, only guys signed after 2000, only guys signed after 2010. But the most shocking thing was that the Padres only have 1.
Really?
Despite all that money they've spent. And it's not even really true, because I was giving him benefit. It's Luis Urias, their infielder who they traded to the Brewers. And he's not at 2-WAR this year. I was kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's at like 1.6. So despite all the money they spent on the international market and all those guys, this is just position players. You know, they've spent a lot of money on pitchers too, but it was just something interesting and a preview of an article I'll write at some point in the future once I figure everything out.
I guess for me, it does surprise me, and that's fine though. To me, just because things have gone wrong doesn't mean you quit doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been aggressive and they've spent the money. If they're not getting the return for it, well, that's on them. But I still like the fact that one year they blew the doors off and tried to gather in all that talent that they could. And I guess, you know, they need to do a better job.
Well, I mean, like I said, I didn't count the pitchers, and they've done a great job there, and they've used these guys as trade chips, and that's you know, I could extrapolate that farther and say, okay, he turned into a two-win player because they traded him, but like, you know, they went and got Snell. I don't know what he's done this year, but they used Patino for that, and any event, you know, yeah. not to derail things, Raj, you want to go ahead and do your Good But Ugly?
Sorry, the NFL season's right around the corner, and you mentioned San Diego. So anytime I can use this San Diego Superchargers song, I will. I had to use that opportunity. Because San Diego, all they have now are the Padres. They don't have the Chargers anymore. They're now in L.A. Yep. So they, yeah. Anyway,
I was just my brother was texting me about college football starting tonight. And
college football starting tonight? Wow.
Minnesota's beating Ohio State 14-10 at halftime.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Wow.
So. Final score, 60-14 Ohio State.
Yeah, somehow they're going to rattle off 40 points. So my good this week is Gamer Candelario's month of August, and he's been on a tear. He leads the league in doubles, which is something that is very rare for a Tiger player to do. And right now, his month of August, he had a WRC plus of 113, which is above average of what the Tigers had in the month of August as a collective. He was batting 267 with an OP, slash line 267, 315, and still got at 475. And he had three home runs and 13 RBIs, but it's really just the kind of the quality at bats. Today, he almost hit another home run. He had a three-run homer. Then in the, I believe it was the eighth or ninth, he almost hit one out again. And he seems like a different player. I know there some people don't want to extend him, but at the same time, he is now, in terms of Fangraphs, Chris, and this is something that always stands out to me, and we've talked about this before, he's a 2.2 war player right now on Fangraphs. So if you put that in baseball reference terms, because those two are very different, it's in terms of a season he's having, just in terms of what kind of player he's been, impactful player for the Tigers right now, and putting him at third, I think just keeping him at third has been probably the best decision. Where I know last year he was kind of out of first place. He was in first place. Maybe that's why he had such the back issues. But he's got 2.6 war, according to baseball reference. So either way, he's been productive, and that really helped the Tigers, despite finishing under 500 for the month, which is, again, what A.J. Hinch has been doing with his lineup is sort of just maybe voodoo-like. I don't know what he's doing. But either way, it's working. My bad is the whole situation with the entire, well, it's kind of a mixture of both, but I really want to go with the top player in the National League in the month of August, CJ Cron. And also the National Rookie of the NL Rookie of the Month was Frank Swindell of the Cubs. So the reason why that's kind of bad is because I was never understood why. I mean, I can understand to a certain extent why they didn't re-sign CJ Cron. Perhaps they were worried about his injuries because he had back-to-back seasons where he was injured. But he didn't make an effort. I mean, he wanted to come back here, and I don't know what happened, whether it was the analytics guys or the old-school guys or whatever happened there. But it's kind of bad because, I mean, right now, Ronaldo Nunez was signed by Milwaukee. So, again, the first baseman situation, although, honestly, Spencer Torkelson is going to be there anyways next year. Okay, pump the brakes a little bit. We don't know that for sure until it's etched in stone. Be that as it may, he's still left the just kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth a little bit. But two guys that they weren't really patient on. And again, it's just like the same thing with like, well, what about
Adelin Rodriguez?
Yeah, Adelin Rodriguez or guys like Yariel Gonzalez. How come they're not getting opportunities? They're just filling minor league rosters right now. And again, Rodriguez, I feel like this has been a broken record. We've talked about this the last month or so. He just can't hit off speed, but it's just weird to me that there's not been more of an opportunity to recognize that or Frank Tunnell. He didn't do much when he was up here, but still looked better elsewhere.
Yeah. You know, part of me wonders, because I think you're right. Like it is interesting. I thought that they did not give Renato Nunez nearly enough of a chance. He seemed like he got like 30 at bats. I didn't even. Yeah. But part of me wonders if this is an AJ Hinch thing, going back to, we've talked about this before over the years about kind of the changing role of the DH and also maybe the changing role of the first baseman, where you don't just want somebody who has to only play first base or DH now. You want kind of to use those positions. So Scope plays first base. He can play second base. They got Cabrera. There's nothing much they can do there, but kind of the classic, not classic, but now like a utility guy. So you can give guys a day off as a DH rather than, you know, having just a strict DH. I wonder if that's kind of a Hinch thing, or he just doesn't want that plotting first base only guy. He wants somebody he can move around a little bit. I don't know. It's interesting.
I would agree with that, because the versatility of Scope has helped out too. And so that's kind of, even, I mean, Scope has struggled since the contract extension, but again, still to have the versatility at second first base now with him does help. But still, I mean, two guys who were with the Tigers that could have yeah. helped out. So that, and the ugly is the Mets situation, as Zach Scott was arrested on charge of drunk driving. He was coming back from the amazing Mets, like a fundraising foundation for at Steve Cohen's house, who was a team owner, by the way. And he's due in court next week. He was promoted to acting general manager back in January. But, yeah, so he was pretty – I mean, before that, his history with Boston was with the Red Sox. But the other part of the Mets, too, is a whole thumbs up, thumbs down between Lenore and Javi Baez and that whole situation where we were not going to let her players do that. It's New York. You knew that coming in. New York fans and Boston fans are the toughest. Mm-hmm. They're going to criticize you. Although, you know what's funny to me? I think Tiger fans are just as brutal, but we tend to be a little more politer about it, I guess. not on social media, though. Or, well, yeah, on social media. Because if you there's some social media accounts that mm-hmm. if you say one bad thing about the Tigers, it's rubble. But New York, I mean, they lose two in a row. They're like, this team stinks. You know, it's a very, those two markets are not forgiving at all. I mean, look at Bill Buckner. He had to move to Idaho. I mean, and then when they won a World
Series, yeah,
the late great Bill Buckner. I mean, he had to move to the other Idaho. I mean, this guy was in major markets. I mean, he played for the Cubs too.
Dodgers.
Yeah, damn near 3,000 hits, I think. It was like 2,700, 2,800 hits. Yeah. You know what's funny is I'm a huge fan of the thumbs down. I find it to be more enjoyable than the middle finger. Like, yeah. It depends on how, like, people mostly just go, yeah. I like to just like I went through a period way back. It's like 20 years ago now, and it seems very silly. It's one of those things. My friend and I, we went to like Universal Studios or Cedar Point or whatever. And, you know, you get on the roller coaster and they always give you the thumbs up. Yeah. And we just thought it would be hilarious. Like, right as you get towards the pass, they just look at you and go, like, oh, thumbs down. You're going down. Like, what? What's going to happen?
You're going to die in Gemini.
So, yeah.
Oh yeah,
he's Walter. You're talking about Tyler Collins, right? Tyler when he Collins, gave everybody the finger.
Yeah. He did this, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he talked about it and apologized. Yeah, no, I don't know. I like Joe a good Nathan thumbs down.
But didn't Joe Nathan do this too? Like, didn't he
I think he did this. I think he did the old scratch my nose middle finger.
I thought he did this too. I thought he did this.
He might have done. Who knows what Joe Nathan might have tried it all. I mean, that was, talk about proof of the Tigers bullpen curse, man. That guy was like basically a Hall of Fame track. Yep. Comes to Detroit and just falls apart.
You know, every time I think about the article I wrote about cursing the reliever curses or the starter curses we signed, and some idiot on Facebook's like, this guy's a terrible writer. No, it's a curse. I'm like, is he nuts? Are we missing something here? Hello?
Yeah.
Joe Nathan. Matt Moore, you freaking idiot. You're a terrible writer. There's no such thing as a curse. Get the out of here.
Anyway. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So. I don't believe in curses, but still, bad luck.
Yeah. Bad luck, you know, or you don't have momentum. It's not a thing. Is it a thing? Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But
I think, yeah. In certain sports, I think momentum's a thing.
Yes. That's so did we have any other questions before we get to Walter's questions?
I didn't see any questions online. I don't know. I don't hear. Yeah. It's an unusually quiet episode. I didn't even hear that we didn't have the Good, Bad, and Ugly music playing, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I wonder. So maybe my setup is messed up now, so I can't hear it.
No, I played it.
It was there.
Oh. Yeah, oh, yeah. I didn't hear it at all. Interesting.
Really? Did you? But you've been hearing this all night, though, right? The
Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, I hear the drops. I just that's odd. I wonder what's going on there. Oh, well, good. Hope I wasn't talking too much over the music.
No, no, you weren't. Actually, in fact, that was the funny thing. You weren't saying anything during the drops or the music while I was playing. So,
no.
But by the way, so, yeah. Questions, folks, just want to let you know. Listen to the pot. Whoa, Chris got cut out there. If you have questions for the show.
Tigers, no, we really can't hear.
Now you, tigers@srd.com. Just ask us a question or go to our Twitter accounts. If you want to go to our Facebook, Tiger Minor League Report, or our Twitter account, Tiger ML Report. If you have questions for us, numbers, we love questions. We wanted to do a trivia thing tonight, but no one, I don't know what
people
are.
I really wanted to hear your trivia questions. I wanted to try my best to guess them.
Ah, man. No, because I really like the way you put that question out there about the home runs. And then immediately I rattled off three without even thinking about it. Had to be
you named two that I missed just by not focusing on the other random drafts, the secondary drafts and the January drafts, which have always confused me. That's when they got Kemp and Howard Johnson. And yeah, also through that, I discovered that the Tigers once drafted Darrell Evans back in 1966.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's
one of the five times he was drafted.
So Walter's question was a really good one too. But again, I'm going to just say this again: questions every week, please. I shouldn't have to beg for questions, folks. You guys, don't be this passive audience. Participate. We love participation. So, the question he had was, who would make the 40-man roster going in the Rule 5 this coming up? And there is, you know, I was looking at this, the 40-man right now, and there's a couple guys in Toledo that you and I talked about this privately, Chris. I think we talked about this too. There's a couple guys right now that are kind of on the bubble or pretty much, I don't think we'll be here next year. But if you're looking at Toledo's roster, Walter, let me just say this. I don't think Brian Garcia, Jacob Robson are not going to be here. I think Paredes might be traded, but those three right there off the top of my head right now. And to replace them, of course, Riley Green, Justin Turkelson, and Ryan Kreidler. That's an easy foregone conclusion, I think, right there. And I think Cody Clemens also makes the 40-man roster, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Clemens needs to be added to the 40-man roster or he'll be Rule 5 eligible. Among other players in that category, like the guys you have to add, is that maybe Angel DeJesus, although I don't know. I mean, he was a little field guy, and he hasn't been terribly good. I mean, I think we might see the Tigers go into the offseason with like a 35-man, 40-man roster. Like I feel like there are a lot of guys who could get let go, even guys that necessarily they might want to keep, like a Jason Foley. They might just remove them. I think, you know, and there's a lot of guys who are going no matter what, like Garneau and Willie Peralta. And I don't know if, I guess they still technically have Miguel Del Pozo for a while if they want. But like Derek Holland's gone, I think, you know, all these guys. So there's going to be a lot of space. I don't see them adding Torkelson and Green and Kreidler just because they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But we could see them make the team out of spring training next year, which is why I think they're going to leave some spots open. But yeah, I'm trying to think, other than Clemens and DeJesus, I guess we've talked before about guys like Keter Montero.
Jason Beck is saying it's Clemens, Vest, Reese Olson, and DeJesus.
Yeah, well, I guess Olson isn't on the 40-man, is it?
Right.
No. So yeah, I mean, they definitely add him. So that's a good one. That's a new guy they've added. I just, you know, I don't necessarily see it with DeJesus, but you know, if they want another internal arm and get him to Fetter and see what he can do, sure. So I think that's probably about right. I don't even know about Vest because they didn't protect him last year. He was taken somebody and he wasn't good enough for the Mariners. So like I don't think I'd necessarily be worried about that. And they haven't brought him up at all. So.
Yeah, they haven't brought up the other reliever either, who they got from Houston.
Nivaldo Rodriguez. Yeah. He's a guy that doesn't particularly stand out to me. So I think he'll be gone. So I actually feel like they do. Oddly enough, they've gotten better this year, but it's kind of like been a condensed group of better players where they've gotten rid of some of the chaff, but there's still a bunch of guys on the team that they're just kind of mixing and matching. They're doing the roster churn that we wanted them to do
forever.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I, one of us, if not all three of us, because it's a long off season, we'll do some sort of deep dive into like the roster situation and who they could target and how much room they'll have and all that good stuff. I did it last year and I think I mentioned that they'd add Lang and Manning and Fido and Wentz. I don't know who, I forgot who they added last year.
You mentioned Wentz last year. I remember that.
The one guy. Yeah. And then I was like, hey, maybe Will Vest, and they didn't add Will Vest, and then he was taken. So, but yeah, it'll just take a little time to go through it. But
like Jason Beck, he asked the question in one of the MLB columns, the Tigers have basically four of their own free agents. Are they going to bring them back or not? Mm-hmm. And he listed Urania, Holland, Tehran, and Peralta. Who thinks Peralta got a shot?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, Tehran, just the injury, I think, basically takes him out of the equation. Unless, you know, you never know. Maybe they'll bring him back in the spring training invite again and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Urania, I think technically, they, I think, don't they have him for another year if they want?
Is there a player option for that, or was that?
I thought he wasn't a free. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess they signed him as a free agent, so who knows?
Yeah, it was a 1 year deal, yeah.
And Holland.
Yeah, I don't think Holland's coming back. Again, who knows?
I mean, Wentz could easily replace him if you're going to push him out of the bullpen, which I thought Mark Gourash did that on Twitter, and I thought about it for a second. I'm like, you know what? That's not a bad idea. If you're going to get some more starters, because right now the current crop. Again, the starting pitching right now is kind of razor thin at the moment until we see what's going on with the draft picks, and that's not going to be till middle of the summer until we get a good gauge of what's going on with the current picks from the draft. And even now on the international side, which is something that we'll hint to Chris is working on, the international side of things for pitching has not produced much either. And so it's going to be – the Tigers have to be – again, the shortstop should be the critical thing for the free agency offseason. But I also think that, again, resting the pitching staff, Spencer Turnbull, to be out for Tommy John, you got Fado coming back, but he also has he's more of a bullpen guy, I think. There's bullpen risk to that, and that's fine. But I think that because he throws two good pitches really well, I think if you get the Fetter effect on there, I think that'll benefit him. But honestly, Walter, to finish up answering your question, really, I mean, for Paredes, I think the reason why I thought that he had trade value is because he can also bring back a couple pitchers that can – you can use to either the bullpen or as the starters to kind of temporary until everybody gets ready. I mean, Matt Manning's start today as well. I mean, Oakland's a really good offensive team. Josh Harrison was probably injured here or something, but he's been just looks like the same all-star he was when in Pittsburgh just a few seasons back. But Manning, again, it's going to be a while before Manning, we've seen some glimpses of it. I know you're the low man on him, Chris, and you probably, you know.
You know, it's funny. As I was starting to buy in right before today's start, I was like, you know, he looked good last start. And basically, because one of my inside the numbers was going to be, he actually had the lowest FIP of the three rookie starters.
Really?
Lower than Mize and lower than Skubal until today. And it was mostly because he hadn't given up home runs. And I guess it stood to reason, though. At a certain point, if you can't miss enough bats, you're going to start giving up home runs. But, yeah, I mean, it's 13 starts. And that was when another one of my inside the numbers was going to be, but I felt like I've done too many on Manning. I was going to set it at 14 and say, how many big league starts does Matt Manning get next year? Because I feel like he's getting these starts mostly because they don't have any other options at this point. It's like, you know, it's Drew Hutchison. Do you want a Drew Hutchison or Matt Manning? It's like, yeah, we'll give the young guy a chance. So, I feel like he's got to get a lot more consistent with his secondary pitches. I liked that he came out throwing really hard today. I think he needs to throw really hard to succeed. It doesn't seem like he can sustain that throughout the game, though. He was, you know, he was 96, 97 early, and then it was back down to 93. It was a long inning for him.
Yeah,
it was.
32 pitches in the first.
But, yeah, I don't know.
So you said the over-under at 14?
Yeah, 14 starts for Matt Manning in the big leagues next year.
Well, I'm inclined to take the over.
Yeah,
he pushes 20.
Well, and then one thing, I mean, they have to figure out what they're going to do with Matthew Boyd, who has actually been one of the more effective starters by the numbers this year, but was hurt and, you know, he's going to be getting a raise, and we've seen basically what he is over the last couple of years. So I don't know. It's tough. They're going to have to find some more pitching. That's for sure.
I think, you know, Michael says over. I'll go with you and stay with the under. Because as Walter said earlier on our YouTube channel, he doesn't need to outpitch. And I know Chris and I have talked about this changeup over and over again. We've done some video on it. So if you go to Tiger Mountain Report on the YouTube channel, there's some Matt Manning videos where he's looking at it. We went to a couple of his starts this year. And you even heard we heard the Tiger personnel talk in front of us about working on a third pitch and getting that down to a science. It's just going to be imperative. And if you can get that done I can see the Tigers maybe put him in the Arizona Fall League. Maybe get a couple starts there.
Yeah, you know, it's maybe to build him up. I could see that. He's just been so interesting this year because he's had three like absolutely disastrous starts, and the rest of them have been mostly fine. But no matter what, if he's awful or if he's fine, there have been very rare occasions where I look at him and go, "Yeah, okay, that's it. That's it. He's showing the signs." Like I still don't know how he's succeeding. I don't need to know if he keeps doing it. Who cares? But I just feel like if the Tigers are serious about getting better next year and even contending, he might not be a guy whose ups and downs they can live with. But again, Michael was saying that the A's got to Skubal too. Skubal's issue has been, and hopefully he'll figure it eventually, but it might always be home runs. If he didn't give up home runs, he'd be fantastic. He gives up a lot of home runs. And when I watch Skubal, it seems like a lot of times the home runs, we've talked about this before too, the two home runs against Goldschmidt in his previous start, I thought those were pretty good pitches. But a lot of times it just seems like he takes a pitch off and it's a 93-mile-an-hour fastball over the heart of the plate and he gets crushed. And I don't know if that's a concentration thing. Maybe it's just me projecting that onto him. But it seems like at some point he's a guy who's going to be able to get locked in 100% for the whole game. It just takes some guys' time. So, like, you know, I often compare him to Scherzer. Scherzer wasn't the absolute madman that he is now when he started in Detroit. At least I don't remember him, you know, yelling at the ball and being that crazy. It felt like that was something he had to teach himself. I don't know.
In the postseason run, when Max started doing like those extra, we started seeing more of emotion. He's always kind of like, he was kind of quiet. Then you started seeing that more often. For Skubal, look, I'm just excited for the fact that the Tigers have a late round draft pick who's pitching as well as he is, and, you know, knock on wood that he stays healthy. And then really right now, as one of our listeners has mentioned too, there's not four or five starters out of the rotation.
Yeah.
And to still be at where they're at right now at 63-72, I believe, or 63-71, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but I have the record like the way they are is
63-72.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why he's pitching this year. I just feel like if they're going to try to contend next year, they're going to theoretically have more options than Manning. You figure Mize and Skubal will be there if they stay healthy. But I don't know. After that, it does get kind of tough to project. So who knows? Maybe he will be the fourth or fifth starter for him.
Yeah, we will know after this winter who they bring in. You know, I think personally, if he stays with the ratio of acceptable start to disaster start that he has now, he is a fourth starter probably. You know, somebody who's going to give you 130 to 150 innings next year, and be fine. I don't expect a whole lot of the back of the rotation, and I think we'll see some improvement. I really do. I think he's going to learn to miss some bats. I have to believe that's going to be job number one of Chris Fetter when it comes to Manning this winter. And I think he's surviving the summer. So I want to see more, personally.
Yeah, you know, there's also he's got a 6.29 ERA right now. That's not going to work, but you do wonder if it weren't this season, if they were trying to compete, if they would really be letting him in there to take those lumps like he took today, like an 8-run. Like it felt for a while today, like, hey, he doesn't have it. They're just trying to, you know, let him figure it out. But
I was surprised he came back out for the fourth.
Yeah. But, bring up our friend Mark Gorosh again. He thinks that Manning needs to do the kind of in vogue thing now that Lucas Giolito did and some other pitchers have done where they shorten their arm action basically. because Matt Manning does have a really long arm stroke, it seems. And I don't know necessarily what that might change. But remember, Lucas Giolito was a fastball curveball guy in the minors, like Manning, and came into the majors and like turned out, hey, you know what? This fastball and this curveball, they're both not good. They have low spin. They don't get things. And then now he's like this elite changeup guy. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, you know, you got to give guys time. I'm not burying Matt Manning by any means. I just wonder if they really mean to compete next year, if they can survive his growing pains. But maybe he'll have figured it out by then.
Well, here's the question I have. What do they need to compete next year? I mean, so many people are really happy with this club that you read online. And we have to remember, even though they played pretty well for 100 games, they are, what, 8 games under 500. What do we got to do? What's the...
Well, yeah, that's another thing. I felt like, you know, people in general, the opinion, or not the opinion, but the sense I get from people around Tigers fans around today is like, hey, you know, they came back. That was good. It's nice to see some fight in this team. And it is good. It's nice after the last couple of years. But at a certain point, it's going to be like, yeah, that fight's great. Why don't you win? Yeah. Win some more instead of this. So, yeah, I think we're going to need to see them. Everybody wants a shortstop. I do think that that's going to be the main priority. They're going to have to get at least one big position player, I think. If it's not a shortstop, it's an outfielder or, I don't know, second baseman or somebody like that. And I think they're going to need to add a couple starters. And not just like the stopgap, maybe one stopgap starter, but a couple,
yeah,
who are, you know, who are.
So we're talking four players, really. I mean, do you think they have the fortitude for four guys, four signings, substantive signings, and one winner?
I don't know. I mean, that's something else I'm going to put out there is like, hey, here are five ways to spend $50 million. Which one? Pick your poison. Do you want the Stars and Scrubs route where you go get Carlos Correa for $32 million a year and you have to get three Jared Saltalamacchias? But
thing I wrote yesterday.
Yeah.
I put out four names and I put it around $60 million to $62 million. I could be way off on those numbers. But I think that's the kind of investment they have to make if they really want 22 to be a year of contention.
Yeah.
And I put out Marte, Semien, Verlander, and Colin McHugh. I mean, and those are just names. Obviously, there's guys you could substitute in there, no problem. But those are the kind of expenditures I think they're going to have to do.
Yeah. I mean, there are kind of a surprising number of interesting free agents on the market this coming year that aren't getting a lot of pub. That, I mean, we mentioned Eduardo Rodriguez before. Steven Matz is a guy who might be kind of interesting. He's injured a lot, but he's he's like a solid number four starter who might be able to get him for fairly inexpensive. I was talking to Raj the other day, like, as much as I want to believe it, I just have a hard time seeing the Tigers shell out one of those massive contracts again, another 10-year, $300 million deal. I feel like...
I do too.
I feel like they're going to talk about wanting to stay flexible. And so, like, I feel like it's going to be a couple, 3-4-year deals, maybe. But...
That's where I think, like, Semien and Marte are at that age where a four-year deal, they'll probably be accepting of it. You know, especially Marte, he's 32, but he hasn't lost his legs. And it's interesting, a lot of buzz has been kind of generated around him lately. So, I was watching MLB Network this morning, and Rosenthal and Dan O'Dowd, they were intimating, maybe they're getting some word that they think the Tigers are going to spend some money this winter.
Well, I that would certainly be welcome. It would give us something to talk about, give us something to write about, and give us something to watch, which is always fun. So,
yeah, and again, they're really competitive, and this weekend coming up, they're in Cincinnati. They start the series tomorrow, a 3-game set before they head out to Pittsburgh for Labor Day, and then they come back home for one of the hottest teams in the American League, Tampa Bay, which I'll be definitely going to those games next weekend. But
nice,
yeah. So Chris, you should be along and watch the Rays because it's gonna be some good baseball. But I'll be going Saturday the first time. Great American Ballpark will be my first time out in Cincinnati. I have a buddy of mine who's from the area, and I would love, you know what I would love to do is do like the Saturday in Cincinnati and then go out to Pittsburgh on Monday for the 1:35 Labor Day game. Sweet. But that's a lot of driving, but I don't know, that'd be kind of sweet. I've never been to Pittsburgh and I've heard nothing but good things about it. So we'll see. But either way, the Oh, that's a, you know, that's a one last. Yeah, I don't think we will, Nico. I don't know about that, but anyway.
No, I don't think so. I think he's due for a raise. They've got other guys who can play all over now. Like I said, I've been saying, I think that they've been grooming Zach Short for kind of that position. He's probably going to have to hit better than 140, but I get the sense that actually AJ Hinch likes Zach Short, and that they're going to try to really work with him in the offseason to cut down the loft in his swing, because he's got surprising power, but he hits way too many pop-ups. I think his average launch angle is like above 20 degrees or close to 20 degrees, which is just too high for a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good candidate for Arizona fall ball too as well.
And it's in, you know, if you're talking about adding money in the offseason, that's a way to save like $3 million. But every little bit might help them, you know, sign other guys.
Yep.
All right. So thanks very much for listening to the Tigers podcast. For listening. And then, of course, on YouTube, if you're watching, thanks to Walter and Michael, who participated quite a bit here. And again, it's awesome. We love live comments, live feedback. And we got some, I think, on Facebook, too, as well. So, everybody, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week. I think the Sunday show will be kind of, right now, just the way things are with the minor leagues wrapping up. We might do a Sunday show, depending on what we see on Friday and Saturday. But, yeah, thanks again for everybody checking us out. We'll be back. And, again, leave us a comment. Leave us some feedback. And, yes, go Tigers, absolutely. And go to iTunes. Leave us 5-star review, or if you think we're not 5-star review material, you want to give us a 4-star, be a hater, that's cool too. But as Bonnie Jones would say, but until then, we'll see you next time.